Right now, it's time for Stephen Brunt. Stephen?
Good morning. How are you?
We're all right. How are you?
I'm fine. The machine, the magic machine is still in the shop. Maybe by the end of the week.
What did you do? Did you get some mustard in there? What happened?
I think that's entirely possible, actually.
Yeah.
But I think something, perhaps in transit from Newfoundland to Hamilton, something happened to it. But yeah. It wasn't happy after we got back.
No, clearly. And now we have to talk to you on the telephone.
Yes,
now people will really be able to tell the difference between you and my Commodore.
I think we're probably exactly the same on a normal phone, right?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Yeah, so I keep hearing anyways.
Yeah, now we definitely know who's who.
Yep, helping the listeners out.
What did you make of the Stamps Ticats battle going back to Saturday?
I thought it was pretty darn entertaining, which is not something I would say for every game this year. It's not been the most scintillating CFL season. Two pretty good teams, two really good teams, maybe the two best teams in the league. Hamilton's got to clean a bit of stuff up, but otherwise that's about as... It's funny that, you know, they've lost a million games to the Stamps in a row in Calgary, as you know, but a lot of them have been close, even when they had some crappy teams, and a lot of them were close. But that... Those teams look pretty similar to me. And you get a field goal blocked, you make a few mistakes at the wrong times, but that's, you know, and Hamilton's still got a bunch of guys hurt. So I think we saw the Grey Cup preview there, which, so if they're going to win one at McMahon, that'd be a good time to do it in November.
I'll say this, and we've talked about it a little bit, and one of the takeaways I take from the Hamilton side is I like this quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
This is not they're very fortunate. This is not a team that is obviously and clearly playing with its second best quarterback. I don't think there's been much of a drop off at all. He's gotten better every game, has he not?
He definitely has. I was pretty skeptical at the beginning, and when Mazzoli went down with the ACL, the non-contact ACL, it felt like the year that they were rolling, and then Zach Caleros got hurt, and that killed their chance to win a Grey Cup. So I would have been in the abandon all hope camp at that point. Dane Evans struggled at the beginning. It was kind of hard to see what, it just, he hadn't played and you didn't know what was there. I don't think he's as good as Mazzoli. But Jeremiah took a few years to get to that point and apprenticed for a long time. But yeah, what I'm seeing is a guy who, you know, is not making a ton of mistakes now. He moves reasonably well, moves very well. He's got a decent arm, not a great arm, but he seems to be making pretty good decisions. And that's what you don't necessarily see in a guy who hasn't started a lot of games. He seems to have a pretty good handle on the offense they're running, the Tommy Kundel offense they're running. And, I think they can win with him. And I would not have said that, you know, even 3 weeks ago. I think they could win the Grey Cup with this guy.
I don't disagree. I think he's a fine young quarterback. I think we've had this conversation probably about a month ago. We're starting to see that next wave, the younger quarterbacks who would seem to be ready for prime time, or at least a 1A, 1B shot going into next season.
Yeah. We've turned the page. You know, obviously Saskatchewan was forced into that this year, and that's worked out pretty well for them. Now Ottawa's got two guys, neither of whom can play. So that's a bit of an issue. But, you know, Vernon Adams in Montreal, Toronto's still trying to figure it out. I guess somebody else is going to have to play for the Eskimos this week, too, it looks like, because I'm not sure Trevor Harris is going to go. But, yeah, the combination of injuries and opportunity has allowed, well, at least, you know, I think we've seen two or three guys pop up in the league who, you know, have a chance to stick, including, you know, Nick Arbuckle, who played, you know, when Bo Levi was hurt. So... That's a good sign because, you know, with however long it lasts, with the birth of the XFL next spring, the pool's going to get a little, you know, that much shallower again.
Well, and I mean, it's probably a ways away, but there is potentially another team coming into the league as well. So the quarterback position is going to get a little bit thinner, too, when the new Halifax team comes in.
Yeah,
if the new Halifax team comes in.
Yeah, I think that's an if right now, because those guys keep kind of changing their plan and saying, oh, no, we'll play in Moncton for 2 years in a 10,000-seat stadium while we wait for the stadium in Halifax to be built. You know, they haven't got the money to build in Halifax yet, and, you know, one of those guys, you know, God love him, but, you know, he was involved, Anthony LeBlanc was involved in one of the Phoenix Coyotes ownership groups around the time when they were, you know, trying to kind of pretend like they had enough money to operate and kind of trying to baffle people with a lot of optimistic talk. So it's, I'm on the record saying, I would love it to happen. Atlantic Canada is a fabulous place. I'm not sure it'll work out there, but they've got a chance, and it would be a kind of a sense of, give the league a sense of positive momentum, which it needs. But boy, until you hear something about a stadium, it's not really worth paying attention to this.
I'll say this though, they will probably get a stadium before we will.
Yeah, that's probably true. So, actually, yeah, that may well be true.
Power to them, I suppose. I know that. Just shifting gears a little bit. Mitch Marner gets signed.
Yes, our long national nightmare is over.
I want to ask you, because we discussed it here, how much of, because it happened fairly quickly, and it was not long after Elliott reported he had turned down Marner, a 7-year deal at $11 million per. I wonder if, could some of the expediting of this have to do with the bad optics of a guy turning that money down? Because clearly it was not the Leafs that were being cheap. They had come to the table big time. I wonder if they looked at each other and said, this is not good press. Let's get this done.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because there's a real interesting stew here in terms of the public relations battle. And you know, whether that moves a player to make a decision, or it doesn't move his agent, I'll tell you that. So that would have to be the player stepping up and saying, let's get this done. I don't want to, you know, I'm taking a beating here. There's a lot of stuff out there that came out, and those kind of numbers in a situation like this don't come out by accident. That is a propaganda move by somebody. Somebody wants that out there. We've seen it in other circumstances and in other sports, where somehow the team's offer becomes public just so people can't say they're being cheap, or they're, you know, that they want that notion out there that how can you believe that this guy could turn down this amount of money? That's a fair offer, because, you know, for most of us looking at those numbers, that's, you know, it's insane money, right? It's life changing money. It's money that none of us will ever make in our lives, and they like to play that card. The same thing during collective bargaining. You know, the league plays that game during collective bargaining too, and agents play it on the other side. I'm just not sure what public opinion means, because, you know, the public is not going to determine this. The public will show up and fill those seats at Toronto Maple Leafs games no matter what happens here. And you know, even if they're a little upset, the first time he scores a goal, he'll be a hero.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know. Like, but there was a lot. The other thing is, there was a lot of weird stuff about his father creeping out.
Yeah, I know. It was a weird one, right? Because if you were to follow the plot twists, the money that he turned down, 11 times 7, mm-hmm. that comes out, and then he signs, and then the word that I was given 2 offer sheets, but yes, I didn't entertain them because Toronto is where I wanted to be. It's all very calculated, isn't it? Where everyone's getting played here.
Well, yeah, we had the agent on the radio last night, and he talked about that, the offer, the phantom offer sheets that were in, what, Minnesota and Columbus, allegedly, and it was that Mitch just didn't want to play for those teams. He wanted to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It wasn't that the money wasn't any good in those offer sheets, or that he was, you know, that he was worried that he'd sign one, and then the Leafs would go, sure, we'll match that, because we would have paid you more. Yeah, this is I guess the question I would still ask is, to what end? Like, why does it matter? I understand, you know, if Mitch Marner was monitoring social media the last 2 weeks, he probably would have seen a bunch of stuff he didn't like. But you know what? That's just true all the time anyway. And if I was his agent, I think I would have taken his phone away and said, look, this is not how, you know, that don't let that sway you. This is about numbers. This is business. This is not personal. But yeah, the stuff started to creep out about Paul Marner, sort of in the way stuff started to creep out about Michael Nylander last year during the William Nylander negotiation, where it was the bad dad, right? The bad dad was playing hardball because that's the kind of guy he was when he was a player. And maybe that moved the needle a little bit. It would not appear that it moved it a lot, because he he still got a really good deal. You know, it's, he, you know, whatever you think his market value is, that's a heck of a deal. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are in an interesting position now with $40 million going to four guys. It's going to be interesting to see how they manage it going forward. But, you know, look, it wouldn't be, I can tell you, and Mike can probably talk about this too, but I know during collective bargaining that the league worked hard on players' kind of hearts and minds, that they wanted players to think that the fans were turning on them. And they wanted to undermine, they tried to undermine the union and the lockout by doing that. And it, you know, to a degree, I think it worked.
Just fill me in quick. Hopefully it's not a terrible question. I'm a little out to lunch on the dad. What's the deal with the dad?
Well, he's like the world's worst hockey dad, I guess. You know, there was, you can look this up, but there was the CBC back in the day when Marner was a little kid, the CBC did a kind of a small documentary about hockey parents.
Okay.
And Paul Marner allowed himself to be mic'd.
Okay.
Watching his kid play hockey and driving him to the rink and stuff, and it's like he is a cartoonishly awful hockey dad. People should be, you can find it somewhere out
there.
Okay,
I'm going to look it up. I don't like the guy already. Just listen to that.
Yeah, so he's got, so that's out there, this image of him, you know, berating his kid for not playing well enough when he was a little kid, and being just kind of a, you know, the nightmare dad in the rink. So a pretty easy guy to paint as the villain in this case.
You mentioned the fans turning on the players. I found it maybe more so in this free agent class than any that we've seen before, where a lot of the talk about these 20-year-olds arguing for or negotiating for $8 to $10 million, there's been a lot of, oh, these kids are greedy, just get back out on the ice. Are you surprised with how the fans have kind of turned on some of the players? Because it's not like it's little mom and pop organizations they're taking this money from.
Well, yeah, and fans, you know, but the greedy player thing, that's you don't have to scratch too hard to get to that. You know, it is, they are crazy amounts of money. Now, you know, when you say to people, well, you know, the reason they make crazy amounts of money is because you care so much and it's your money. This, you know, this is a pure reflection of your interest in the game and the money you're willing to spend on tickets and the sponsorship and the advertising that's sold on the television broadcast that you watch. It's, this money's coming from you. So, you know, if the culture's out of whack, you know, look in the mirror. But I think the other thing is people haven't, well, it's two things. One is, in a cap system, there's also that sense that if you pay one guy, it means you're not paying another guy. That it hurts you, can hurt you competitively, and that's a change. That, you know, if you go too much all in on a couple of players, somebody else is not going to get paid, and that actually hurts your chances of winning a Stanley Cup in terms of depth. So that's one thing. But the other thing, I'm not sure that. Look, the value in, and it's not just in hockey, in a lot of sports, the value has shifted towards younger players. You know, guys are playing younger, they're starring younger, they're more significant contributors younger. I think the median age in the NHL right now is 23. But the system is not constructed to pay those guys their market value. It's constructed to pay guys mid to late career their market value, because the guys who are negotiating, you know, the guys who are in the union and the guys who, you know, drive the bus during collective bargaining are veteran players. So these are young guys who do have enormous value, and the only way they can get it, the only way they can try and get it is, you know, it's not a holdout per se because they're out of contract, but is to withhold their services. That's the only leverage they have, and it's messy. You know, you don't like the idea of a guy not showing up for camp. You don't like the idea of a guy not being there for the beginning of the season, but there's not really any other tactic available to these players and their agents. That's the only thing they can do.
And I find it interesting when people are saying, well, what has Mitch Marner done? Hasn't won anything. And then you turn around and say, well, of course the Blackhawks aren't competitive. Look how much they're paying Kane and Taves, and they're old and they're not doing anything. It's like, who are we supposed to pay in all of this? Is everyone just getting $3 million and we'll just go on with it?
Well, it's you know, and yeah, well, that is the point. Look, I don't know if you can win a Stanley Cup paying four guys half of the cap. I don't know. No one's done it. And if they're gambling on the cap going up, that will happen eventually. But I don't think it's going to happen in the next couple of years. You're waiting for whatever the new American broadcast deal or content deal or whatever you want to call it. That's 2 years away. The gambling money's not going to start flowing for a couple of years. You know, I was talking to Berkey about this yesterday on the radio, and he's, you know, he was suggesting they might flatten out the cap for a couple of years to kind of ease the escrow issue that the players have. So, you know, if you, it's, you know, the percentage, the you know, the amount that would be held back in escrow would be reduced if you flattened out the cap a bit. But that'll make it tougher. So, you know, we're seeing teams take a risk here. You know, the Leafs have two of their top four defensemen are going to be free agents after this season. How do you sign those guys? How do you sign either of those guys? It puts an enormous amount of pressure on drafting guys, developing them, getting them into the league on their entry-level contracts and getting some value out of them right away.
So let me ask you this. The answer is somewhere in between, but which was worse or which is better? The way it is now, where it's the kids coming out of entry level that are getting the big dough, whereas before they got nothing and it was the guys at 31 or 32 that were getting the big money. So now we're paying for the potential, whereas before we were paying for what you've accomplished already.
Yeah. Well, look, the system, I still, one of the things that will forever amaze me, having watched this play out low these many decades, was that the National Hockey League had a system. You know, long after the, you know, the C form was abolished and all of that stuff, where they used to own guys from the time they were 14. But there was a long stretch in there where they owned guys from 18 to 31 that controlled them. How do you screw that system up?
Yeah.
You know, how do you blow your brains out in that system? You control their prime years. They had very, very limited leverage. You know, and you're right. So what, you know, what happened was teams ended up overpaying guys in their 30s for past performance because that was who was available. You know, a team like the Leafs or the Rangers, the two richest teams in the league, had enormous payrolls, but it was, you know, it all went to guys because they were in inept organizations in a lot of ways. They ended up paying guys for what they used to be, not what they were. But in terms of, you know, the owners being able to control the economics of the league and make money, that's a great, you know, I'll take that system right now. You know, give me the prime years of anybody I draft, more than the prime years. Give me their entire career, essentially, under control. I won't mess that up.
Yeah, you look back, it's like, what were you guys doing?
Yeah.
You had all the young players in their prime, and they had no leverage, and you guys still mucked it up. What the
they heck? Mucked it up, and they ended up, you know, eventually losing a season to get into a system which, you know, everybody, look, players are getting paid in this system, and teams are making money, and the league is definitely more stable than it used to be. But the reason it was unstable, you know, wasn't because there wasn't enough money in the system. It was because of the guys operating the franchises.
Be good, Steven. We're out of time. We'll talk to you on Friday, buddy.
All right. See you guys.